learned just that you need to get everything in order. When the very first one in the series, when it was talking about Adam naming all the animals and how after that was when God brought him Eve and how for this reason a man will leave his father and mother after he had named all the animals, just getting everything in order before God will bring you your spouse. That hit hard, but it was good to hear.
I guess through this series that God has taught me that he needs to be the center of all relationships. Okay.
The one thing I guess that I've learned through this series is just make sure that my drawer's nice and neat, because when I dump it out, I don't want God seeing a bunch of clothes all messy, and you know, it's just got to be clean.
You need to have the same focus point. It's the person that you're going out with.
What was it that Louis said?
I've learned that you're never too old to learn about relationships, and so this applies to somebody as old as me and not just to the younger kids here.
I found the part about the drawers with all the various amounts of baggage that we all have actually surprised me, but I think that we all have that and we face that, and I thought Louis was very relevant in terms of just giving that to Jesus and not ignoring it or trying to blame somebody else for that.
Probably just to wait for a girl that's everything I'm looking for and not just settle for something less than that.
I learned that the first sacrifice was God sacrificing an animal and using the skins to cover the shame of man, which is something that I've been praying about for weeks, and I never knew what it was.
I never knew that God was thinking about our marriage already, that he's already got it planned and is already thinking about it. And the rules in the Bible are to protect us and make us have a better marriage.
I never thought about that everybody's made in the image of God and that you need to be respectful of that person because they are in the image of God.
I've learned that God really works on us individually first, and then when we got our act together, then we're ready to move on to something better.
Don't date a guy unless he's not living at home and has a steady job.
Wow. I think they put that together just for my edification, so that's huge. I saw this deal, maybe you've seen it, if you're having some problems in the whole dating area, this wouldn't be a good encouragement to you, but it might fit for somebody. Have you seen this? It's the application for permission to date my daughter. Have you seen this? Well, some of you girls may want to take it home. Note, this application will be incomplete and rejected unless accompanied by a complete financial statement, lineage history, that means who you're from, and current medical report from a doctor of my choosing. And then it has your typical name, birth date, height, weight, IQ, GPA at the top, social security number, driver's license number, date awarded, Eagle Scout, Sunday school attended. Do you have one male and one female parent? If no, please discontinue this application and never contact any member of my family again. Goes on and asks, any brothers or sisters? Are they normal? Do you own or have access to a van, a waterbed, or a truck with oversized tires? Do you have an earring, a belly ring, or a pierced tongue? Do you have a tattoo? If you answered yes to any of these questions above, please discontinue this application and leave the premises immediately. I love the end of it. They ask all these questions. It's apparently for somebody between that kind of high school moving into college. Please list all colleges or universities that had offered you a full academic scholarship. Please indicate which service academy you will attend. And then it goes on down to the end. How many community hours of community service do you perform each week? Your choices are 10 to 20, 20 to 30, or 30 and above. And it says, I swear that all this information is correct, and it has a place for the signature of the applicant, the signature of the applicant's father, the signature of the applicant's mother, his minister, the state representative, and the local police chief, and then a place for fingerprints down at the bottom. So some of you may want to grab a copy of that and have it at the house. May not be your problem. You may not have anybody asking, so I don't know where you fit in, but oh, isn't that sad? Looking at a couple of those guys in the video, that might not be the worst thing. I don't know. I'm not sure. It's Louie, by the way. It's nice to be with you tonight. In case I didn't mention that earlier. I think tonight we're coming around a concept that, all kidding aside, I feel like somehow the tide of the culture is taking us away from, and it's the word commitment. And somehow it's like the death knell of relationships, you know. Hanging out's great. You know, doing stuff together is fun. Enjoying life and all that's great. But then when it starts getting down to, okay, are you in or are you out? Is that where we are tonight? Is that sort of where we're... She's like, oh, thank you, Lord. I'm so glad. Oh, yes, I'm glad you're here tonight. It seems like when we get down to that place in our culture, most of the times we're out. And I don't mean across the table from a guy or a girl. I mean in anything. I mean, we're in a loosely aligned culture where nobody, you know, is really that committed to anything. I was reading some stuff a while back that just blew my mind. It said between college graduation age and 30 years old, the average person in America has 6 major job changes from graduating college to 30. 7.1 addresses from college graduation to 30 years old. That's a lot of forwarding my mail little things at the post office. You're getting mail with yellow stickers on top of yellow stickers on top of yellow stickers. And then when you add on to that the number of relationships we go through, I mean, it applies to everything. Church life's the same way for people in the 20 to 30 demographic. It's, you know, how many churches have you been to? How many singles groups or college groups have you plugged into? And we're just a loosely aligned and a loosely affiliated culture. Branding for us has gone out the window. The value is keep all your options open. And so for a lot of you, you can't even make a decision about where you're going on Friday night because you got somebody on the email, you got somebody on the cell phone, you got somebody on call waiting, you're waiting for a better offer, you're not sure who's going to be there. You're trying to the very last minute to cover all your bases and hedge all your bets because, you know, the worst thing we could do is make a commitment and say, you know what, I'm going this way. This is where I'm going. This is my path. This is where I'm headed. And certainly things can change and probably will change. But I'm going this direction and I'm not going to give up at the first sign of trouble. I'm not going to jump ship at the first time another, you know, deal comes by or another relationship opportunity opens up. I'm going to actually jump in and make a commitment and go for it. And because we're in a very loosely aligned culture and commitment really isn't anywhere in our culture, I mean, we don't value that in marriages, we don't value it in any setting in our culture, then it trickles down into the mindset of we date, that's fun, or maybe even dating's too big a commitment for you. Maybe, you know, you're like, no kid, man, I don't date, I just have friends, you know, because I don't want to make a dating commitment, that's too big a commitment, much less I'm like seriously dating somebody or only dating somebody for heaven's sake or engaged to somebody or going to get married to somebody. That's just too big of a commitment for me right now because I'm 27 years old and I got to keep all my options open. That's where we are. That's where our culture is. And in the midst of this whole culture, God is saying to us, it's my intention for the vast majority of you in this building tonight that you would find a suitable helper. That's my plan for your life. I don't know what God's will for my life is. God's will ultimately is for you to find a suitable helper. We talked about it every week, and I got summarized well, I like that. But we're talking about detaching from home. We're talking about stabilizing in our life. That doesn't mean having a huge 401k and some massive retirement and a big house and even, to be honest with you, getting it all together. It just means starting to stabilize a little bit so we're not just, you know, up and down and not sure what's going on. Detaching, stabilizing, and then beginning to get a grip on God's calling for us. Where is it God's sending me? What's God's purpose for me? Why am I on the planet? And start moving in that direction. It does not mean that you come into a relationship and go, okay, here's my deal, here are my fingerprints, and you know, here's all the information, and here's my 10-year plan, and here's the way I think we're going to get there, and here, throw anything at me, I'm prepared. That's never going to happen. You're never going to meet a guy like that. And if you do, then, you know, what fun is that, you know? I mean, how fun is that? I mean, life is about the journey. But detaching and stabilizing and at least getting a direction is what God's plan for us is. And to bring someone to our life that complements. It's amazing that how many people have commented to me over the few weeks of this series that they're not really convinced they need someone to compliment them. they feel pretty much like everything's going fine. And I think that's another trickle down we're going to see tonight of a culture that's stressing independence. And we're serving a God tonight that is pushing dependence. Dependence on Him and on His purposes and His plans for the very best in our lives. And for most of us in the building tonight, it's God's will that you either come down an aisle or you're standing at the end of one. Oh my gosh. And at some point in the deal, you say, I do. Now that's what makes men nervous on wedding days right there. I tell you. I mean, it's you're just like, I. And part of that is true. I mean, when you say I do to one woman, you just said I don't to about 3 billion plus other women. This is a big statement. I mean, we don't typically incorporate in the ceremony, but it might not be a bad idea. But it's tough for us, I think, to get in the mentality of coming to be friends with the words, I do. And we live in a culture that says, hang on, let me wait, let me evaluate my options, let me check it out, let me sow my wild oats, let me play the field, let me explore every opportunity, let me try this, let me whatever, whatever, whatever. And God is saying, you need to start getting in your vocabulary the words, I do. You say, Louis, I don't even have a girlfriend and don't want one. Thank you very much. So this has been a nice series, but I'm here for the music because I'm not dating or even hanging out or certainly hooking up. And I think maybe in 10 years I'll come back and buy the CDs, you know. But the way that you prepare to say I do to a woman is that you learn how to begin to say I do today. See, last week's talk was just amazing. It just so encouraged me. And I'm terrible with titles. I drive everyone crazy around here because I don't typically start with a sermon title and usually don't even have one by the time I give it. They usually come to me later. And the title I gave last week's talk after the fact was, Healthy Marriages Start Now. You see, your marriage doesn't start the day that you get in the bride's room at the church and get your hair, you know, in a beautiful updo and get the dress on and all the bridesmaids are there and everybody's had a nice dinner the night before. That's not when your marriage starts. It doesn't even start when you meet the guy. It starts a long time ago and it's going on right now. And the best thing that many of us can do tonight is forget about meeting Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright. And forget about what it's going to feel like one day to say, I do to you, and I don't to all the rest of you, but I do to you. What a great phrase, you know. Till death do us part. That's beautiful. You got to keep that somehow. You got to stay with that. You can't get one of these, you know, we're going to be soulmates and friends, and, you know, you got to get that in there somehow, even if you do a contemporary ceremony. Till death do us part, I do. Not as long as you have your hair, I do. Not as long as you have your figure, I do. Not as long as you're working at the job you're in, I do. Not as long as you act the way that I want you to, I do. Not as long as you give me what I want, I do. But I do. In sickness or in health, I do. In good times or bad times, I do. Highs or lows, I do. This year, next year, I do. 10 years from now, I do. No matter what circumstances life throws us, I do. I commit. I said it. I commit my life to you. I do. And the way you get ready for that, it's not to psych yourself up on your wedding day. The way you get ready for that is you learn how right now where you are to start saying, I do. And you learn how right now where you are to apply what it means under God to be committed to something and to hang in there with it because of His leadership in your life, even when times get tough. A couple definitions of commitment, a short one and a long one. I just want to get these out there for your thinking. If you have a pen, you might want to write them down. The short one is this, that commitment is a desire to love that goes beyond circumstances. Commitment is a desire to love that goes beyond circumstances. I think, you know, sometimes we have these great fantasies about our lives with our future mate, and the words that serve us to top are we're in love with each other and love's beautiful, don't hear me say it's not, or it's about the romance, or it's about the friendship, or it's about the passion, and all those things are essential in our relationships. But at the end of the day, the thing that drives our relationships is commitment. And commitment is a desire to love somebody no matter what the circumstances are. Because, I mean, by the time you get to that altar, you're like, you know, everything's pretty good. Life's been great. We haven't had to live together yet, hopefully. And so we haven't, you know, been through that whole dilemma. And it's just great. We got all these presents and we got a bunch of money from people. And we've had a lot of attention and we've had a lot of showers. And everybody's excited and everybody's got their best clothes on. And either members of our family that don't normally talk to each other or trying to be civil to each other. Everything's pretty good right now. But tell you what, once the cake's done and the garter belt thing's over, everybody goes back to normal life. You got to take some of the stuff back, and a lot of it you won't ever use. And now it's you and her sitting somewhere together going, all right, got to go to work today, honey. You know, life starts. And all of a sudden you have three little boys running around the house, and it's like, whoa! Circumstances, man, changing. You're not dropping them off somewhere, you know. I mean, it's your deal. It's your life. It's your marriage. It's your home. It's your relationship. And the passion, yeah, may be there, may not be there. Love may be at some different levels or expressions. The romance and all those things that we sign up for. But it's the commitment that keeps us in the game. It's saying, I choose, I desire, I want to love you. And I don't care what the circumstances are. I talk about my mom a lot, but you've heard me say this, but 14 years ago, my dad became disabled almost overnight. And he never drove a car again. He never played golf again. He never dressed himself fully again. He never went back to work again. And for 7 years, my mom took care of my dad almost 24 hours a day. And that's what commitment is about. Everything has changed. But I'm in. Everything is upside down. But I love you. And that love is based on a desire to love you no matter what the circumstances. Longer definition kind of builds in a few more components. And I like this because it really sort of gets to the heart of it for me. That commitment is two people submitting to God and each other with no intention of turning back. Don't you love that? With no intention of turning back. Marriage is tough. And if you go into it with even an inkling of, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, I'm out of here, then you're sunk before you get in. You've got to go into it saying, I have zero intention, zero, none, nada, not any intention of at any point turning back. That's what commitment is about. Believing God will be enough no matter what. And that's what God's looking for. In your life and in my life. There are three enemies of commitment, maybe 33, but there are three I want to focus on tonight. And I have in mind tonight a couple of people, not anybody by name. I know you think, oh, great, Louie's going to start naming people. Not anybody by name and not really anybody particularly that I have that I know per se, but just a couple of prototypes of people that I think God wants to sort of zero in on tonight. And I say that even though that might get a little touchy for if you're one of those three kinds of people here. But I think that God is wanting to say to some of you tonight, I'm just going to go on out there with it. It's time for you to get in or get out. Now, we got a lot of college kids here, and we'll deal with that later. But, you know, a lot of you guys are just, you know, kind of hanging out and all that sort. We got a lot of single adults here, and you've been through the thing. And we got a lot of people here, and you've been seeing people, hanging out with people, dating people. And it's time for you to get in or get out. It's time for you to come around the words, I do or I don't. It's time to say, God, can I make a commitment? Or, Lord, I don't know that I can, and that's been my dilemma all my life, to make a firm stand and say, no turning back. But, Lord, I want to make that kind of commitment, and I want you to help me with that. But I believe God wants to really zero in on a segment of us and say, it's time under God because of what He has done to feel the freedom to go on for it and make a huge step in your life as well. We left off last week with this passage, and I want us to look at it before we jump into these three enemies of commitment. Psalm 37. We looked at it last week. I brought my New American Standard this week so I could read it for myself. And I think we're going to put it up in New American Standard. But verses 3 to 5 is what I want us to take a look at. And this is beautiful stuff. Read with me, if you will. It says, trust in the Lord and do good. That's a great combination of stuff. Trust in God, but in the meantime, trust in God is not a passive thing, it's an active thing. So while you're trusting in God, do the right thing. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. That's just a beautiful picture there. It's as you're waiting on God and trusting God, hang out and cultivate a faithful lifestyle. What does that mean? It means cultivate a mentality of faithfulness, learning from His faithfulness in your life and cultivating a life of faithfulness to your job, to your parents, to your studies at school, to your friendships, to your relationships, to yourself, in every environment. I want to become like my Father, and I want to become a faithful person. I want to jump out of the loosely aligned and loosely affiliated culture of people who want to keep every option open and somehow have an in and an option to everything. And I want to be faithful to somebody. I want to be faithful to whatever it is. It may be a small thing that God's put in front of me. It may be a big thing that God's put in front of me. But I want to learn faithfulness. Why? Because one day, ultimately, I want to stand before a guy or a girl and I want to say, I do. And I don't want it to be my first experiment at I do. I don't want it to be my first time of saying, well, you know, I hadn't lasted at anything I've done, and I've given up on a lot of stuff and bailed on anything when it got difficult, and I've never been one to hang in there when the price was tough, and when the sun got hot, I always seemed to look for the shade. But, hey, let's get married. I mean, I'm telling you, ladies, you are not looking for, you know, some supermodel here. You need to have a radar screen out for a faithful guy. A guy who's got a track record of showing up and being there, the thick and the thin. And guys, same with you. You're not looking for some, you know, some babe that's just like, oh my gosh, she is so hot. That's what I need right there. That's the helper I've been looking for, is a hot helper. I need a hot helper, Lord. Cold natured, need a hot woman. That's what I'm looking for. Is she hot? That's all I need to know. You need to meet a friend of mine. Is she hot? Well, I don't know. That's all I care about. Is she hot? New question. Is she faithful? Is she a person of commitment? Is she cultivating faithfulness in her life? Wherever she is, Pizza Hut, I probably shouldn't say this, but I stop at the Pizza Hut on the way home a lot on Tuesday nights, get a pizza to go. Hamburger, olives, bacon, thin. And there's a girl that works there, and she used to come here all the time. I don't know if I should even tell her story, but I guess I did, so there. She used to come here all the time, and she works on Tuesday night now. It's family circumstances. And she works next door from 8 to 5. And then she works there until she closes. She said, I hate missing 722. I love it. I just thought, wow, that's faithfulness right there. Not by any choosing of her own. That's circumstances outside of her control. But the if she stays with that under God, the gold that's going to produce in her life. At an age where so many people are, you know, don't have any responsibility or don't know how to keep any. I just thought, man, that's so amazing. It's cultivating faithfulness. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness, or cultivate an I do attitude. And then verse 4. Delight yourself in the Lord. Isn't that beautiful? and he will give you the desires of your heart. Everybody underlines that last part. He will give you the desires of your heart. He will give you the desires of your heart. You know, the Bible says he'll give you the desires of your heart. And Lord, I want a hot one. That's what I'm looking for, you know. And you said you'd give us the desires of our heart. I'm looking for hot stuff, Lord. So that's what I'm hoping for, praying for, thinking about. Oh, yeah. Delight yourself in the Lord. And getting to the place where you could say reverently, you know, Lord, you're hot. You are hot to me. You are enough for me. You are on. I am all about it. Dial me up. Count me in. I'm on board. Delight yourself in the Lord. Why? So that he'll give you the desires of your heart? I mean, he's not that stupid. I love you, God. You're so important to me. Can you give them to me now? You know, I mean, he's a little smarter than that. But man, when a heart gets uncontrollably affected by God, then two things happen. One, our desires change, hello. And God seems fit to open up heaven and just pour out stuff on us. But we're not sitting around delighting in the Lord going, okay, it's time now for me to get what's coming to me, God. I've been delighting in you long enough, so let's get going with the desires of my heart. Here they are. When you start delighting yourself in the Lord, your desires change. And even some of your desires for relationships will all of a sudden come into a whole different perspective. And right now, some of you are boy crazy, and that's all you're about, and that's all you think about. And you're online talking to six different guys every night, and it's all about this whole thing. And all of a sudden, you start delighting yourself in the Lord and realize, God, your love is so much, it's on another league than these poor boys' love. I mean, your affection is in another world than these little guys, and the way that you treat me is unbelievable, and who you are is beyond comprehension. And all of a sudden now these things begin to get reordered by that. And then he says in verse 5, commit your way to the Lord. In other words, to God say, I do. So before I'm saying to you, I do, I'm saying to God, I do. Trust also in him, and he will do it. He'll do what? Well, it goes on to say some specific things here, but he'll do anything. He'll do everything. He'll do whatever it is you're nervous about that keeps you from saying, I do, to her. If you trust in him, he'll do it. I think for men that God has put in us, and ladies, I'm just helping you understand us a little bit and why sometimes when commitment comes, we bail. There are a couple of reasons. We're going to look at three specific ones right here real quick. But there are a couple of other reasons, and one of them is God made us providers. That's the way he made us. And I don't want that to sound sexist in any way, but it's the way God made men. Okay? Men, and believe it or not, want to work, and we want to be able to provide. We want to have a family, and we want to provide for that family. We want to take care of our family. That's what God put inside of us. And ladies, you got to let us be that way. You've got to let us on. You got to let us own that. And when we feel that, a lot of times, and I'm just not trying to make excuses for us, but a lot of times we wonder, can I pull that off? You see, women are not wired up that way. Women are wired up to say, you know, I need a partner. I need somebody that I can come alongside. I'm that helper, and I need somebody that I can join with and make the whole momentum thing stronger, the two of us together. Most women are not wired up of, I am going to provide for the family. Hear me roar, I am going to go for it. And so it's a different dynamic. And a lot of times a guy will back up because he's just not sure. I mean, for me, and I tell personal stories all the time, but I mean, for me, I was called to preach, okay, in college. I wasn't thinking I was going to be a preacher, all right? That wasn't like when I got, you know, the little aptitude thing in high school. I know a career. I'm going to be a preacher. That'll really go over good. Make lots of money and have a nice house and provide for my family, and that'll be cool. You know, preachers, you thought, okay, this guy sweeps out the hallway, has to fight with the deacons, doesn't make any money, and then they run him out after 5 years. That's what I want to be. You know, I want to be that guy. You know, all right. And bad suit, the whole thing. I mean, I'm looking for that guy right there. That's what I want to be in my life. Didn't get any respect, you know, and you know, start preaching the word, and then people get mad, and these people get upset, and then you're out on the street with your family going, hey, sorry guys, I know I'm supposed to provide, but you know, we're out here on the curb, and I'm a college student. And God's now captivating me with a calling to proclaim the gospel. And I'm over in Smyrna, where I lived at the time, lying in my bed in a dead sweat, waking up in the middle of the night, and I'm going, how in the world can I say yes to God's plans and will for my life, which means no to commerce, industry, and financial future? You know, I didn't know that God would provide the way he provides. If I'd known that now, I just laughed at myself. But I thought then, this is going to be difficult, and I'm projecting all the way down the road. I'm going to be somewhere in life, and my family is going to get put out on the street because of the gospel. I'd seen that happen to preachers in my life. I'd seen that happen to my preacher, where the whole church just said, we don't want any of you. And the vast majority of them just left and went somewhere else. And I thought, man, that's the future. And somehow in that night, college student even, wrestling with this whole thing, God said, I don't know where the verse came from. I don't know where I'd learned it. I don't know what youth camp it got into my mind, but God grabbed it somewhere in the back of my mind and pulled it right to the front screen that night. And he said, faithful is he who calls you. He also will do it. 1 Thessalonians 5:24. Faithful is he who calls you. He also will do it. And I went, wow. All I got to do is go forward and commit my way to the Lord. And then everything else downstream, God is committed to doing in my life. That's what the psalmist is saying. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he will do it. Say, I do. A couple things really quick. I'll buzz through these and we'll jet out of here. Enemies of commitment. The first one is expectations. Two things expectations can do. In one case, we can settle for less, and I'm not suggesting that tonight, so I want to go on record as saying that. Don't just say, well, you know what, Louis said we just need to make a commitment, go for it, and God's there with us anyway, so okay, I'll pick you, Bill, let's go for it, we'll get married. You ready? All right, here we go. I'm not fully detached, but I'm working on it, let's go for it, just make a commitment and go for it. That's what it takes. It's not love, it's not passion, it's not romance, it's not friend, it's just commitment, so here we go. We went out, now we're getting married. I'm not suggesting that guy comes along, he's not what you think God has in mind for you, and you say, well, I'm 38 years old, and I better take this guy, because he might be the last guy that comes by, and so, yeah, I'll just go with you, make a commitment, because it's really about commitment anyway, and I don't really like you, I'm not attracted to you, I'm not into you, but I take you, because you're here, commitment's what it's about. I'm not saying lowering your standards and expectations. But what I am saying is that some of us have expectations that are higher than what God wants to do in our lives. Because what God said to Adam in the very beginning was, I'm going to bring you what you, anybody remember? What you need. I don't know how it works for you. I jot a couple ideas down. Depends on what demographic you're in. But some of you have this girl in mind, right? She's a cross between your mom and your sister. So that's tough competition already. And she knows that she has the morals and the servant heart of Mother Teresa. She's got Martha Stewart's ability to make cool stuff out of dirt. And I threw Oprah in just because she has all the money. And then I put, I don't know how to pick here, Halle Berry or Kate Beckinsale. I'll just pick two people at random. I don't know if either one of those work for either of you guys. I have friends that Halle Berry gives them trouble, so I picked her. I'm not one of them, by the way, but I do have friends that she gives them trouble. So so somehow that's kind of working, you know. Definitely hot, but when she opens her mouth, it's Mother Teresa. It's the most amazing thing. Cooks like my mom. Makes my bed just like mom did. That's so cool. Hangs out like my sister did. She can, you know, take the lint off the back of a sofa and make something cool to put on the dining room table, you know. And she's loaded. And man, I'm just waiting for her. Some of the ladies... I didn't know how to do this one either. I have no idea what ladies are interested in. I just took a shot at it. We'll see how well I did. I started with your pastor, because I think everybody wants a strong spiritual leader. So our pastor here is Andy, so I'm just going to say Andy. I'm Louie, but his name's Andy, the pastor. But I'll just say Andy, the pastor. I threw Tiger Woods in there because he has all the money. And that's an important thing. I mean, you need that. I put Enrique in there, you know, Iglesias, because he's hot. This dude is seriously hot. Is he still dating Christina Aguilera? I don't know if that worked out or not. I mean, she was in the video. They fell in lust, and I don't know how long it lasted, but there, something's still going on there. You roll those three together. So you got Tiger Woods, you got Andy, or your pastor. Maybe your pastor is a bad idea. I don't know how all that works, but your spiritual leader in there. You got Enrique in there, because, I mean, anybody speaking some foreign language accent, I mean, that's just what it's all about right there. I mean, he can be saying, you know, you're a dog and your mother's fat, and you're like, oh, he's so beautiful. I love this guy. You know, it doesn't matter. Just so beautiful. I mean, you want to take the air out of an American dude in a hurry. He says, have you seen that Fifth Wheel show? You know what that's about? You insert somebody with an accent, and all the guys are going, You know, I mean, you're on to the next game. It's like, I'm out of here. I'm cutting my losses right now, and I'm going. We rolled in a pick between Josh Hartnett and George Clooney. I don't know which works better for you. Is that for Josh Hartnett or George Clooney? Okay. Halle Berry and Kate Beckinsale got nothing, so at least I didn't get that one very, very accurate, but got close there. I put Stephen Curtis Chapman in there. You know? I don't know why. I included your dad. You know, he's got tools in his wallet that he can fix stuff with, you know what I'm saying? Oh, I'll get that for you, you know. I happen to have a ratchet here in my keychain, you know. You change your carburetor. You know, I mean, it's like, wow. It's just amazing. You know, you're like, woo, impressive. And I threw Jesus in there. Yeah. That was encouraging. I might have just thrown him in the other one, too, but I didn't know what that was. You know what I'm talking about. The character of Jesus in there. So we're just looking. It's not our expectations are not terribly high. But we're just looking for a spiritual leader who looks like Josh Hartnett and has the character of Jesus and has got his own plane like Tiger Woods. And can play and sing like Stephen Curtis Chapman and can fix stuff like my dad and talks like Enrique. And if this guy rolls in, I'm saying I do. Count me in. I mean, that may be exaggerated for some of you. You might be saying, hello, if the guy has a pulse and doesn't expire on the first date, he's an option. He's still in the running. But what I'm just trying to say in a lighthearted way is I think that we have to find a place where our expectation is simply this, that God is going to bring me who I need. Because God's plan is for a complementor and a completer. And you might find the most buff, happening, you know, Espanol-speaking guy going on. And you just may be going, oh my gosh, look at the lips on that guy. Look at his eyes. Look at, oh man, he is so amazing. And when he talks, it's so incredible. And you may get along with that guy. And what he's cultivated in his field is just nothing. Zero cultivation. No maturity, no stability, no commitment, no faithfulness, no character. See, you just need to back down your expectation to say, I expect that God is going to bring me who I need. And when he comes through the door, he may not look like the guy I've always dreamed he was going to look like, and we may not meet with that certain song playing the way I've always thought we were, and he may not look across the room, and everything may not go into slow motion like I'm sure it's going to, and he may not say exactly what I think he's going to say, and we might not get married on the date I've already picked out that we're going to get married on, at the time of day we're going to get married, and wearing what I'm going to be wearing, and him wearing what he's going to be wearing, and at the place we're going to get married, which, you know, scary thing, guys, but women already know all this, so you can just take a deep breath on the wedding plans because they've already planned all that. It's like, when are we getting married? Great. 2 o'clock. Oh, you wanted evening. Okay, I'm sorry. Evening's fine. Great. How long have you wanted evening? All your life? Okay, that's great. I'm for evening. I'm good for evening. And what will I wear? You need to back the expectation down, not so that you compromise and settle for less, but so that you don't start at a place that's more than God's ever wanted to give you. Because remember, God isn't interested in the American conglomerate dream person, who, by the way, doesn't exist. Mr. Wright is not all these things. Mr. Wright is the guy God knows you need. And so we have to get our radar screen cleared so that we can start looking for what we need. And you can do that pretty quickly with guys and girls. Character can be evaluated pretty quickly. And some of you dated guys and girls longer than their character warranted because they were hot. And so you stayed with them for a little bit longer, or because they were connected, or because they were in this loop, or because whatever. Their character didn't make it past the first dinner. But their looks or their job or their car got them about 6 months down the road. And we need to bring our expectations back down to what we need, because God has promised to give you what you need. Oh, quickly, the second enemy of commitment, and this is the biggest one, is selfishness. I think selfishness in our culture is the enemy of just about everything. The reason a lot of us don't say "I do" is because it's just selfishness. And I say, so what is selfishness about? It's about two things primarily. It's about being preoccupied with me being in control more than being preoccupied with God being in control. And so you got somebody sitting there going, you know what? I'm doing great. I got my house. I got my stuff. I got everything where I want it. I got some girls I hang out with. Or a girl I hang out with all the time. What more could I want? I'm in complete control. And God is saying, well, that's the problem. You'll never get to where I want you to be as long as you're in complete control. You get where I want you to be when I'm in complete control, and I want to bring you a helper, which means you first need to wake up and realize that you need one. And there's nothing to put you more out of control than getting married. I'll tell you that right now. Putting you in a dependent place where you realize this is a team event. And then you learn it's a lifelong process of trying to figure out how that works under God. Two people submitted to God with no intention of turning back, believing that He is enough no matter what. The other thing that selfishness does is it paralyzes us by causing us to be preoccupied with our inadequacies more than God's sufficiency. That's selfishness. Somebody gets to the end of the deal and the relationship's getting close and then they bail out. You've seen it happen before and you never hear from them again. It's like they vanished, poof, you know. No note, no call. You go to the house, the door's closed, the lights are off, the shutters are down. I mean, everything's like gone. No email, no letter, no follow-up, just zippo, nothing. And the person at the end of the day might be thinking, you know what, well, I wasn't good enough, or I didn't think I could do it, or I didn't think I could be a husband, or I don't think I could make that kind of a commitment, or I didn't know if I could say I do for that long. And what happened was their inadequacies began to rise up in them and block out God's sufficiency. And that's selfishness. It's not humility to say, I'm not good enough, or I can't do that, or I can't accomplish that. It's just selfishness. It's saying, it's about me, the relationship's about me, the marriage is about me, the commitment is about me. It's all based on me. It's on me. Well, hello, I think when we come to the end of the aisle and the guy's there, first thing we might ought to say is, I can't do it. I can't do this. I can't love you. I can't be everything you need. I'm not going to be able to figure everything out. I can't do it all. But hello, we are here in the church, not because that's where you're supposed to get married, but we are here before God because God has promised. God has made a covenant with us. God has showed up. God has invaded our lives. God has given us His only Son. God has said, I'm going to be with you in thick and thin. God is the same yesterday and today and forever. God's paid the ultimate price. He's given us everything that pertains to life and godliness. And because of what He has done, I think I can say I do. Because of Him. You're getting somebody who's inadequate, but God is sufficient. You're getting somebody who won't be able to figure it all out, and I'm not going to pretend that I can, but God is sufficient. So I am dying to self, and I'm crucifying myself on the hill of my insufficiencies. And I'm coming to a place of saying, being in control isn't the best thing for me. God is the best thing. In Ephesians, God said, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church
and gave himself up for her. The last thing is optionitis. I don't think that's a word, but I just picked it anyway. I hear people saying all the time, you can create your own reality. You can have it all. You know, the myth is that if you keep all your options open, you won't miss anything. It's not true. Keep all your options open, you'll get to the end of life and not have anything. Jesus Christ committed to one hill and he died on it. Aren't you glad he didn't have optionitis? At the end of the day, he committed to one hill and he died on it. He said, I do. In the place in Scripture, Matthew 5, Jesus said, let your yes be yes and let your no be no. Learn how to say yes and stay with it. Learn how to say no and stay with it. Don't go through life believing the myth. I'm going to keep every door open because I'm afraid I might miss something. And I've done that in my life, and it just, you know, it seems like it makes so much sense on the front end. On the back end, you look up and you go, okay, I've kept all my doors open and all my options open, and I haven't pitched the ball to anybody because I had all my options open. I could have pitched it to anybody, but in the end, I didn't pitch it to anybody. Part of optionitis, I think, ends up where we come in places where we knowingly defraud other people. Thessalonians in the New Testament talks about it. You say, what does that mean? It means coming to a place where you stay longer physically in a relationship, and I don't mean sexually, just physically, bodily, in a relationship than you intend to stay emotionally. You're defrauding that person, and you need to let your yes be yes or your no be no. You need to make a decision. So what are you talking about? I'm talking about you've been dating them for 2 years now. 3, 4, 5. Keeping my options open. And for whatever reason, he's still around. For whatever reason, she's still around. And God is saying, dude, pitch the ball. Die to control, which is, I got a great life and a girlfriend. What more could I want? And start cultivating faithfulness, which, well, I have been faithful. We've been dating for 5 years. Pretty good record right there, I would say, wouldn't you? God's like, no. Bad record. Good record if you're 13. I don't know, maybe that's not a good idea to date somebody 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, but, you know, give or take. But when you're 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30, bad record. You should have known about her character by now. You should have been able to tell by now if she's who you need. And if she's who you need, you should have said, I pitched the ball to you, and I'm not able, but under the sufficiency of God, I say, I do. Let's never turn back. Or you need to say, I've been here physically longer than I plan on staying here emotionally. I knew 5 years ago, I knew 2 years ago, I knew a year ago that I wasn't going to be around here in 15 years. But I'm just hanging out till somebody better comes along right now. You need to let your yes be yes and your no be no. Defrauding somebody, it's saying something to another person that you have no intention of backing up. Telling them, I love you, when you have no intention of backing that up. What you need to say to them is, I'm in like with you. I like hanging out with you. I like being with you. I like not being by myself. I like what you do for me. I like the way I feel when I'm with you. I like some of the things we do together. I like you. Do I love you? No, I don't love you, because love means I'm willing to lay down my life for you and make a commitment to you. And no, I don't love you. But you get to places where you say, well, you know, if she's going to stay around, I got to start telling her I love her. Okay, I love you. And she probably has super radar powers and goes, nah, I don't think you do, but I'll take that for now. I'll go with it for a while. Or she may have blocked that out because of her tremendous desire for that relationship. And she, or you may have just done a good sales job and she's receiving it and believing it. And what you're doing is you're defrauding her. And you need to let your yes be yes and no be no. You need to speak the truth in love. You need to have a truth in dating policy. Well, if I tell her that I don't love her, she's not going to hang around with me anymore. Okay. Well, we'll work on that when that happens, but you need to tell her the truth. Defrauding somebody is when you tolerate their expectations even though they're not your expectations. So what does that mean? It means you're in a relationship with this girl and you know she thinks you're going to get married. Now, no, you haven't said it, she hasn't said it, because she knows if she says it, boom, you're shutting down, lights are going off, shutters come down, and you're out of there. So she has said it, but you know it. You know her expectation is, we're going to get married. And you're just tolerating that, knowing all the while that your expectation is, we're not going to get married. And all the while you're defrauding her. Because, no, I didn't promise her we'd get married. No, but you know that's her expectation. And you know it's not your expectation. And you need to say yes or you need to say no. You need to speak the truth in love. We talked about taking these drawers out and emptying them at the foot of the cross. And the cross is a powerful place for I do's to begin, because it's the place that He has stretched out His arms, that He has bled and died, that He has given Himself fully for us. We weren't perfect, but He died for us anyway. His expectations weren't as high as ours are sometimes. He wasn't selfish, but He was selfless. And He didn't keep all His options open, but he chose the cross and He died on it. And because of what He has done in receiving that tonight, it begins to free us to say, you know what? Because of His faithfulness to me, I can be faithful to you. I can say I do. Let's pray together. Lord, whether we're in a relationship and need some adjustment tonight, whether somebody here is thinking about getting married and what they really need to think about is not getting married, or whether we're just a person who's on the front end of the whole dating scene, Lord, wherever we are and whatever is going on, I pray that You'd speak to all of us tonight about cultivating faithfulness in our lives, about coming to the place in our life where we're able, because of what You have pledged to us, to pledge our commitment to those around us, to begin to say, I do. And Lord, I pray for anybody tonight that has a specific message coming their way, that You just give them the grace to receive it and to know that ultimately the health of their relationship is in the balance of them speaking the truth in love and doing the right thing for the person that they're in a relationship with. And I have that person on my heart tonight. I just pray that You give them courage. Show them how much You love them tonight. That's our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.